Hey, I'm Zale, host of Preconceived, a podcast that challenges the preconceptions that shape how we view the world. Preconceived examines both our approach to major life choices, but also our perspectives on issues to which we may have been overly conditioned towards certain opinions. Each episode features a different topic, with experts, researchers, and luminaries in their respective fields. We think you will especially enjoy recent episodes on polyamory, regretting parenthood, dopamine nation, and myths of the beauty industry. Find Preconceived wherever you get your podcasts.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy ad free. That's amazon.com/comedy ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, baby.
Hello, my love.
What was I just going to say? I was going to say something.
How much you love me? How nice I look?
I love you, and you do look great.
Do I?
Yeah, if you want to see how Bridie looks right now, go to patreon.com/turnmeon. You can watch.
Guess what?
I love your little red and black sweater.
You like this? This was my grandmother's.
That's a great sweater. Red and black are two of my favorite color combinations.
Yeah.
It was a long way back. Yeah. I do love red and black together. They look good. There's something
about
a little
chakra red is. What?
My dick chakra.
Close.
I don't know. Your root chakra. Yeah, same thing, right?
It depends. Is your penis the center of your grounding and your safety and security? I feel like you could say yes.
Yeah, I think so.
Based on some of the things that we've been talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, honestly, yeah. Yeah, I think so. I had to think about that I had to think about it for a second because, yeah, you know what? I was thinking about this. I was watching, I think I started something where I talked about this on the show, but over the month of October, I was watching a horror movie a night. It was this challenge that I did and I was posting about it on my social media and people were following along. It was really fun. But I October's been over now for almost half a month and I'm still tuning into horror movies. I'm still watching horror movies like more so regularly than I would typically. And last night I was watching Alien, which I've now rewatched. Oh God. I don't know. Maybe 8 or 9 times. Like Alien is it's my number one favorite movie of all time. So I've seen it a lot, but I was just really like, I was looking at the artwork when I was watching the film. I was really trying to like pay attention to the artistic direction. And this guy H.G. Giger is he was one of the guys that designed the Alien. And he does a lot of the like a lot of the design work within the, you know, the lore of Alien. And it's all very phallic. It's all very like there's a lot of sexuality, a lot of phallic imagery, a lot of like sort of like sphincter-esque openings and things. Like it's very body, like sexual organ focused, right? And there's this iconic scene, if you've never seen the movie, but where this creature referred to as the chest buster bursts out of a guy's chest. And then,
what do you mean it's referred to as the chest buster? I've never heard that before.
No, it's the chest buster scene. Like it is colloquially known as the chest buster, this little creature, right? This alien that busts out of a guy's sternum. And when it busts out of his sternum, all of this guy's friends are standing around and there's like this moment of shock and they're all just looking at it. And it kind of like stands up and looks around and it looks like I was watching it with Leah last night. She goes, "Oh, that looks like a really weird dick." And I was like, and my initial reaction was like, "No, it doesn't." Because I like took offense to it. Like I took offense to her saying it looked like a dick. But in my head, I'm like,
your favorite alien looks like a penis.
It does look like a really weird dick. It does. But it doesn't look like my dick. And so anyway, so where am I going with this? I watched this movie. And then I'm thinking about all the imagery in the film and all the, you know, the phallic imagery and stuff. And then it made me think about how, I'm sure there's a handful, a large amount of people out there who really are disgusted by the look of dicks, you know, like just like, ugh.
Oh yeah.
Like dicks are gross, right?
There are some people out there that can't even look at a person who has a dick.
Yeah, well, there's that too, but I mean, like the actual look of a penis, they're like, ew, that thing looks fucking gross. And I was thinking about my penis, and I really, really, really love my penis.
Babe, that's good.
I have such a deep love for, I love the way it looks. I love the way it, you know, I love the way it feels. I love
the way it smells.
I guess. I don't know. I've never really like gone down. I've never heard that it smells awful, but.
You never do that thing where you put your hand in your pants and kind of like fondle your genitals and then like sneakily take a little.
I do that with my taint more. I do that with like under my balls a little more.
Really?
Yeah.
So close to your butthole.
Yeah. Well, you know. You gotta. Well, it's whatever.
What you're sniffing for? Like, fuck, do I need to shower? Does my taint smell like my butthole?
Yeah, I mean, kind of. Yeah, you know, I don't know. If people's faces are down there, you wanna? I don't know. I look. Just also, I know people know this, but I have a tushy. I have the cleanest butthole in all of the HRM, probably in all of Atlantic Canada, maybe even in all of North America. I'm just gonna say.
Is it shaved or waxed?
It's not. No.
It could get cleaner then.
It could.
That's really funny. I saw a meme, or it wasn't a meme. It was a tushy ad the other day saying that that the cleanest assholes in the world are people who use tushies and a newborn baby who has never pooped.
That's pretty good. Yeah. That's probably true too. Anyway, I love my penis and I'm really proud of my penis. I did go through a period of my time of my life where I was very insecure about the size of my penis because I thought like, you know, whatever.
Because you watched a lot of porn.
I don't know. I don't know where it stems from.
It's strange because you have like a very
we really don't have to go into it.
Average.
Yeah. We don't have to get into the size of my penis. But I now don't have that. I don't have that feeling or that thought anymore.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah,
well, that's
like,
good.
I appreciate my body. Some parts of my body, and that is one part that I appreciate.
Well, that's cool. I wonder how many people out there can say that about their genitals.
Do you? How do you feel about your vagina? Do you think that way about your hoo-ha?
I'm happy with it.
Yeah.
I go through periods of time where I don't like spend a lot of time with it, which is a weird thing to say. Like, I don't really like.
You don't have it over for tea?
It's not in my bubble, my social bubble. Yeah. No, it's just that I don't okay, here, my favorite film, since we're talking about films, is Fried Green Tomatoes. And there's this one scene in Fried Green Tomatoes near the beginning. Well, I shouldn't say that. I don't remember where it falls in the movie. I have seen this movie like 25 times at least, where Kathy Bates and her friend are at a women's group. And in the women's group, the guide is saying, okay, so she hands out a bunch of compact mirrors and she's like, take your panties off. We're going to look at our vaginas. And Kathy Bates is so uncomfortable with this. And she leaves, stumbles out in very embarrassed. And I remember just being like, I don't have any desire to like see my nether regions in a mirror or like just to see what they look like. But I think breaking through that and like that still sometimes if I haven't like seen it in a while, I like,
it's like
I kind of have to steel myself. I'm going to have to be like, okay, here we go. It's kind of like trying on bathing suits in the winter when you're all pasty.
Right.
And like, and you're just like, oh God.
Do you think that's because you can't really see it if you just look down? Like I can literally go, I see it. There's my dick. Like I can just look down and I see it.
Of course. You know, do you have no choice. Do you have to see it?
Yeah. Do you think that stems from not being able to just like check on it any time of the day with like little to no effort?
I think so, but I've never articulated this, but I think there's a part of me also that's a little bit worried that there might be something wrong the next time I look at it. Like there might be something going on with it that requires medical attention. Not that I have any reason. Like I've never had symptoms of an STI. I've never been diagnosed with an STI.
Neither of us have been diagnosed with an STI in our whole life.
The thing is, I have had an irregular pap test, which means that I do. STI
or like HPV, right?
Yeah,
I feel like that doesn't count though. I take that back. I know I shouldn't have said that, but you know what I mean. You know what I fucking mean when I say that.
Yeah.
It's like
I don't know. I think it's just like a little worried that it's going to be jarring or something, or
right.
You know,
what's that? What's the phrase for vaginas that have teeth? It's an Italian term. I think it's Italian. Maybe it's Spanish. El dante or vagina.
El dante.
Vagina dante.
I like that.
Hold on, I got it here. Vagina dentata. Vagina dentata describes a folk tale in which a woman's vagina is said to contain teeth, with the associated implication that sexual intercourse may result in injury, emasculation, or castration for the man involved. There was a movie, a 2007 horror film, now we're talking about horror films, called Teeth, and it was about vagina dentata.
Have you seen it?
Yeah, I have, yeah. It's
how was it? Was it scary?
It was an okay film. wasn't great.
Yeah. I don't know. I would say overall, I have no complaints about my vagina, and I could probably spend more time loving it.
Right.
Since you asked, I could probably be more actively appreciative, expressing gratitude and whatnot, because it hasn't given me any grief, really.
Maybe that's the homework we give our listeners this week. You know,
Punani worship.
Well, not just that, but like, you know, we have male listeners too. We have people with penises. We have people with vaginas who listen. I'm sure there's somebody out there who has both penis and vagina. if you are listening to this, maybe just take some time this week to appreciate and show some gratitude to your genitals. Because, you know, everybody has a set of genitals, and everyone's genitals are so it's like a snowflake, you know? It's like everyone's genitals are so different, so unique, and that's what makes you you. That is, your genitals are literally what make you you, unique. So,
yeah,
just like our buttholes, just like, and we found this out recently, our buttholes are like snowflakes. They are all very, very non-identical. They're all very unique, and they are like fingerprints, right? So we all have very different buttholes. We all have very different dicks and vaginas and titties.
Yeah.
Yeah. And nipples. And
I wonder if I'll always like my breasts. I'm quite fond of my breasts, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I used to get really concerned about how they, if they were sitting lower than, like, they're not. I'll tell you something. I have been a little bit, I've taken a corner really in realizing the aging of my body. Now I'm only 36. Yeah.
Sure.
I think. So I know I compared to lots of people, I'm a young human, but I am definitely not 20 and, or 18 or 19 or these like young ages that are sort of idealized as like the young, live, like, I don't know, even know all the words that I'm looking for, but like,
you're talking about like the most, like in porno, like barely legal, live nudes.
Yeah. But also not only in porn, but also in like general.
Sure. Sure.
Every day, like the sexualized, idealized body is a young body. And, and I'm really aware of how those things are no longer, like, I would have to, I couldn't do the work that I did at 20 years old to try to like clean my pores and, you know, whatever. So I'm definitely like feeling today, I saw my breasts in the mirror and I was like, yeah, you know what? You're not, you may be 36, but they're still sticking straight ahead. They're still, nips are still pointing straight ahead. So that's a good sign.
Is that how you gauge it? Just like the direction of the nips?
Well, I don't know. I assume if I had a breastfeeding baby, they would be all different.
Right.
But right now they are what they are, and I'm quite happy with them. My mom likes to tell me that I'm the reason her boobs are saggy. So,
Well, yeah, don't have a kid, maybe.
I wasn't planning on it, but
there you go. yeah, well, cool. Tits are great. Love tits.
Me too.
Yeah, they are really fun. They're just fun.
They're really fun.
I think about them a lot. I think about breasts a lot. Yeah.
I used to worry a lot when I was a young teenager that I was a lesbian. And I, not because there's anything wrong with being a lesbian, although at the time it generally wasn't like, you know,
cool,
a conversation that was happening a lot in like my peer group.
Right.
I come from a really small town. So there was like not a lot of acceptance for anything that was not the norm, which was like you play sports and you get reasonable grades and you drink on the weekends.
And you eat potatoes. Yeah.
Yeah. I need potatoes. A lot of potatoes out there. But someone called me a lesbian in grade 7 and I was like, uh-oh. And it made me really, now the more that I read about how like women are socialized to be in competition with one another, I realize that, like, these feelings I'm about to tell you that I had were reinforced by the whole society, which was, I was like, oh no, like now I have to be really careful in all of my female friendships to not give the wrong impression, to not like, like to be cool, like, you know, and like don't make them think that I like might want to kiss them or touch them or whatever. And so like, my physical relationship with my female friends never really developed. Like I was never one to like go to my girlfriend's place and like we snuggle on the couch together and like watch movies or like spoon in bed. Like there was like none of that like sort of.
Your sister's like the inverse of that.
Yeah. You know, and she's it's totally weird.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's not weird. It's really sweet. And I wish my female friends were a little more like I wish my friendships were a little more like that.
Yeah. Platonic intimacy. Yeah.
Platonic what?
Intimacy.
Yeah. I think it's, I wish there was a little bit more of that.
Yeah.
My life.
Hey, speaking of speaking of friends and intimacy and closeness, last week we read a what was originally intended to be a brain boner. But then shortly became a resolved brain boner by the author of said brain boner. If you don't remember or don't recall, they were in a bit of a conundrum. They had a new roommate. They were horny for this roommate. They hadn't had make fuck time in a while. The roommate and they were basically asking, like, should I fuck this new roommate? Because like he's hot. I think he has the hots for me, but like we haven't really gone there. And then before we could even answer the fucking brain boner, they came back and they're like, hey, just an update. So roommate went away for like a couple of weeks or something. And I just fucked my neighbor. And that was awesome. And then this person even said, and I broke my wrist in fucking my neighbor. And it was really fun. And then, and so we read that and they were like, also, I don't think I want to fuck my roommate anymore. I was just horny. I just needed to get some hanky panky. Well, anyway, they've written again.
Uh-oh.
And, what did they say, Brad?
Well, our friend says, roommate crush update. The roommate came back 2 weeks ago. We hooked up last night. Thanks, Scorpio season.
Ayo.
All right. We need more information.
That's great. Wonderful news. You fucked your roommate. Also, I just want to say, if you if you aren't tuning into this on Patreon, you should, because I'm about to show the actual X-ray image of this person who broke their wrist while having fuck.
With no identifying qualities on the X-ray.
This is, hold on. This is not what I want.
What is that?
It was, that was me looking up Teeth, the Teeth movie.
Oh, yeah.
So here we go. You can see right here, the X-ray image.
Fuck.
You can see a little break there, little fracture in the bone, and that's probably where it, after, you know, I'm guessing it was like, how do you think it happened? Do you think it was like,
I would say they fell off the bed or something.
Yeah, but like, you
know, or maybe it was like that time I almost broke my hand on hitting you. Remember that?
Yeah, you punched me in the face. I got you to, yeah, you punched me in the face during make fuck once and almost broke your hand. And I think I laughed at you.
Well, there's more to that story.
Okay. I'm imagining that it was like that they were, that she was, you know what it was? Is she was, he was on his back and she was riding cowgirl. So she was like straddling over top of him, facing him, and she was up. And she was kind of like, you know, she was going to give her like special move. So she was moving and gyrating in this way. And I think her back is facing the edge of the bed. And maybe his legs are off the edge of the bed and his knees are bent, feet are planted. And I think maybe she was like maybe leaning back to like caress her breasts for like a show of a performative sort of move. But then leaned back too far and went, oh, shit, and reached back with her hand to break the fall. And that's how she did it.
You should never try to break a fall with your hands.
Break a fall with your tits. Am I wrong on that?
Yeah. Girl should have done a quick spin.
Quick spin.
Once you realized she was going down.
bounce those chest bags off the floor. They're built-in airbags, man.
I love how vividly you can see that. You should make that into a short film.
I've been thinking about it a lot. Remember I told you I think about breasts a lot? Mm-hmm. I think about breasts and scenarios and how and where and what it looks like when people fuck.
Okay. Usually starts with their tits. I know. So do I, actually. I think about that a lot, probably more than I should. But yeah, so friends who are listening, if you're not a Patreon subscriber yet, you can subscribe for $5 a month. You can see my red and black sweater and this week's x-ray. Hopefully there won't be any more of those, though. Yeah. Stay safe out there. Stay safe. We have another brain boner that came in. It was like a brain boner rant. I'm wondering if...
Hit me.
Yeah, I was thinking I might read it.
Yeah, do it.
What do you think? Yeah? Okay.
Yeah, 100%.
All right, listen up. A few years ago, a partner got me interested in your podcast, and I've been listening on and off for a while, especially when we went into lockdown. I've been listening more regularly and enjoying hearing your perspective on things. One of the reasons I enjoy it so much is because you're from the Maritimes. Too often, if I'm listening to podcasts from other areas, larger cities especially, the perspectives and content just doesn't fit with what's happening here. So here's my brain boner / rant, probably more of a rant, because unfortunately, I don't think this has a solution to it. I'm from a small town and now live in a small city in the Atlantic bubble, and I'm an elementary teacher. I've been in monogamous, long-term relationships in the past, was married for many years, but especially recently, just feel like monogamy isn't that important to me. While I would never cheat on anyone and haven't experienced a poly or fully open relationship so far, I don't feel the appeal of being with just one person and strongly dislike jealousy in other people. My past relationships have been mostly with men and generally pretty vanilla, and now that I've been single for a while, I would like to explore other aspects of my sexuality. But I'm an elementary teacher in a small town. I've tried out a few dating apps to mixed success, and part of the issue is I don't feel I can be fully honest in what I'm looking for in a partner on apps where I have seen parents of students or coworkers or other people who know me. Even the fact that I put that I'm bisexual gives me anxiety. And then there's COVID-19. As a teacher, I have a class of students in my bubble. There hasn't been any community spread here in a long time, but I have this fear of being the teacher who spreads this disease to a bunch of families just because I wanted to go out and date. So part of me thinks I should just do the responsible thing and stay away from the idea of dating anyone until there's a vaccine. But then what? I'm still stuck with the same issue of small town dating when I don't fit the norms in a job where my private life could impact my career. Any ideas? Thank you for continuing to have such great and informative conversations about sexuality and health. Stay safe, frustrated in the Maritimes.
Yeah, it's, you know, I mean, you got a bunch of different, sounds like you got a bunch of different layers to this conundrum. You know, it's like the layer of small town bullshit that I think a lot of people can relate to and understand. The layer of fear of being judged based on your sexual preferences, which I'm sure, you know, a lot of other people who listen to this show can understand as well. And then the layer of COVID, which, you know, I mean, that's the layer that's been layered onto every fucking part of all of our lives. But in terms of the first layer, you know, I don't know, man. You gotta live your life. If you live in a small town, like, you know, if it's 2020, it's almost 2021. If you live in a place where you can potentially lose your job because of your sexual orientation or your sexual preference, fuck that place and fuck that job. I know that's a pretty privileged thing to say, but like, fuck your job. But like, actually though, fuck that place. Like, that is like, and also there's that, it shouldn't, like, that shouldn't be that we, I think, I feel like we're beyond that. Aren't we beyond that by now? Fuck. Like, we should be. We fucking should be. If we aren't.
Yeah. I feel that big time. I feel like, you know, something that was coming to mind there was like, again, this is probably a pretty privileged way of thinking about it, but I guess like, think about, you know, I don't know what you're thinking about putting on your dating profile. Like, I'm assuming you're not putting things like, you're seeing parents or coworkers there. Like, I feel like bisexual is like, okay. So what these days? Here.
Yeah, and depending on the age depending on the age of these people too, you could be a little more sneaky about it too. You don't have to like explicitly say like bisexual. You could put, you know, put a pride flag emoji. Use emojis. Fucking emojis are like this simple, effective way of saying something yet without saying it. You know, it's like, yeah. When I text my drug dealer, I know that I'm texting them emojis so that they don't get fucking flagged by the NSA or whatever the fuck. So it's like, you know, you put a pride flag, put a boy holding a girl's hand and a girl holding a girl's hand, like, you know, whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
Put a unicorn emoji, like, you know, you don't have to blatantly come out and say it. And the people that get it will get it. And the people that don't will not. I don't know. Sorry.
Well,
I cut
and
you
also,
off while I went into this rant.
Well, I don't know if this is useful, but I also am just thinking about like, we also have to set an example for the people coming up behind us. And you're an elementary school teacher, and obviously you're not going to go to school and like talk about your sex life and your dating life and whatnot. But, you know, you living authentically your own fully expressed life out in the world is only going to make you feel more confident in other areas of your life. So, owning your sexuality and your curiosity, I think can be a really good step for just, setting that example for future generations. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't need our gay and bisexual and trans people in the fucking shadows. We need them everywhere so that young people can look in the world and see themselves and be like, oh, it's okay. I'm okay.
Yeah.
I kind of reference that, you know, with my own experience. It's just like, oh my God, like nothing could be more detrimental to my social life in grade 7 than being called a lesbian. But I didn't have any, there was nothing like that in my community. There were just no people like just being owning their sexuality around me anywhere. Mm. So those people are needed. And then as for the COVID thing, well, we went through this like 8 months ago or whenever it was. It's like, well, maybe you're going to have to explore some of those curiosities through your webcam for a little bit.
Yeah.
Especially as, you know, the second wave seems to be beginning. It's a little later for us here. If you're anywhere outside of the Atlantic bubble in Canada, then you're well on your way really into the second wave. But we're just getting
it.
It's just starting.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, definitely be extra cautious and keep it to online if you can. To meeting people in that way.
But again, it's not impossible, right? Like, all right, in the throes of COVID, in the midst of like fucking hardcore COVID here in Nova Scotia, me, someone who really can't fuck with that at all, someone who has, you know, a very compromised immune system, maybe it was pure luck, I don't know, but I found somebody who also was in a very similar situation where it was like, I can't fuck around. I have a compromised immune system. I'm also looking for fucking companionship right now. And me and this person figured out a way to like connect and to have a lot of really great sex. You know, it's like the thing about COVID is as much as it's a huge pain in the ass, That's all it is. It's just a pain in the ass. It's one of those things where it's like it just requires us to think outside of the box a little bit more. It requires us to adapt and evolve with the times as they're constantly changing. But it also, but again, it does not mean that we can't just live our fucking life, because you gotta just live your life. You gotta have uncomfortable conversations with the people that you're conversing with to be like, hey, who have you, it's not that unsimilar to having a conversation with somebody about their sexual hygiene and their sexual past and their, you know, have they been tested? Have they been, you know, where are they at?
Yeah, that that's fair. So
it's like, you know, it doesn't, yes, doing it via a screen is the safest way of going about it, but it isn't the only way. And if you are gonna venture outside of that, it just means you have to work a little harder. You have to put in a little more effort. That's all.
Communicative.
Yeah. So.
Well, good luck out there.
Mm-hmm.
Stay safe, and yeah, I think just have fun with it. Just try to remember that it's usually worth it to do the little extra work, because it opens up a whole bunch more fun. So.
Shall we throw to this week's conversation?
Yeah, let's do that.
All right. Well, we are going to toss it to a conversation that we had with Dr. Riley, who is coming at us from, I believe, the state of New York, but they also spend quite a bit of time in the state of Florida. And this is a really fun conversation we had with a mental health expert, aka psychologist, who specializes in the world of open relationships and the lifestyle, as she puts it. So fun conversation. Always love talking to people from down south of the border and getting their perspectives. I hope you enjoy this as much as we did. And
I hope our listeners are just as conflicted about the advice given to the brain for the person who wrote in with a brain boner that we had Dr. Riley answer to, as you and I are. I hope there's as much conversation starting moments in that, because as soon as I heard, I was like, you know what, I have to listen to it again, and I'm sure
it didn't sit well with you, which I was surprised.
It did not sit well. It didn't sit well at the beginning, and now that I think about it, I'm like, okay, yeah. I mean, there's great points in there. But at first I was like, and then I told you that after, and you were like, nah, I was down. So anyway,
I was all
listeners.
I was here for
let
it,
us know.
So, yeah.
But I mean, I'm not the professional. So
Well, let us know what you think. You can always write us, turnmeonpodcast@gmail.com. But before I go into all that stuff, we'll be back at the end of this conversation with Dr. Riley. Well, I am excited because
has no idea what the fuck he's showing up to.
I have no idea. But I do see that we are speaking to Tracy Riley. And I do see there's specifically a DR in front of Tracy's name. And I have another podcast where it's a podcast about health called Sick Boy, and we talk to people with the DR in front of their name quite a bit. So I'm going to ask you the question that I ask all the doctors that we have on my other show, before we get started. Are you a medical doctor or a smart person doctor?
A smart person doctor by process of elimination, because I am not a medical
doctor. Okay, all right, perfect.
That's not the question I was expecting.
I think it's a question that no one really expects when they come on a podcast. Dr. Riley, what kind of doctor are you?
I have a PsyD, which is very similar to the PhD. It's just a little bit more clinically based, and it's in psychology.
Psychology. Okay. What's a psychologist doing on a podcast about relationships and sexuality?
Who would think that? Seeing as how I've been in mental health for 20 years, I've dealt with a whole lot of relationship stuff.
Yeah, I bet. Are you like, do you have a practice of, like couples therapy or?
I have a very, I guess I would call it a medium to large practice. I have 7 therapists that work for me. We see probably 125 people a week between all of us. And we do see couples, we do see individuals, we see families, we see children. So we run the gamut. But as you probably know, the relationships that people have are the foundation of what makes us who we are.
And what pisses us off most.
And what pisses us off the most.
Hey, Bridie, hey, what are you saying? Is there like a subtext there? Am I supposed to be reading between the lines? Or
you know, you know, you drive me crazy. No, you know what's really funny? I can say this because I don't think anyone will tell her, but my stepmom was asking me about my relationship with Todd, and you know, I was saying like, you know, well, like he likes to go camping and he likes to spend time outside, and you know, like he likes blah blah blah. She goes, oh wow, it sounds like you're really like compatible. Would you say you're more compatible than with Jeremy? And I said, well, no, they both drive me crazy in different ways. And she's been separated from my dad for years and years. And she goes, and she thought that was hilarious. And she was just like, what's that about? Because I've just not been in a relationship, is what she was saying, but I've just not let anyone drive me crazy in years. And what is that? What is it that about that the people who are in relationship to us are the people who drive us the most bananas?
Well, yeah, because the people we're in relationships with, they know what buttons to push. And sometimes people push buttons deliberately just to get you where they want you to go, but then they pretend that, oh, I know, I didn't mean to upset you, but oh no, people that you're in a relationship with, they know how to push your buttons and get you right
but
there.
Why would anyone want to push your buttons? Don't we all just want to be happy and peaceful in our relationships?
Depends on your definition of happy and peaceful, because some people are only happy and peaceful if they're causing drama in some way.
There's something else that, and this has crossed my mind recently. And I don't know if this is relevant or not, but I was thinking the other day about how, you know, I think to kind of put a bit of an anecdote to it, Brady, I think you had picked me up, or I picked you up in a car, and I was having like a bit of a shitty day. I was feeling like stressed out. I was, you know, there was like, I don't know, there's like some baggage that I had, right? And you pick me up and I sit in the car. And, you know, you say, hey, like, how's it going? And I respond to you in this way that is like clearly me just taking my shit, my baggage, and I just like dump it all over you. Right. And then I realize that I'm doing this. And I had this thought to myself, like, huh, that's really interesting. If my best friend Brian had picked me up and I got in the car, and he had asked me the exact same question, I probably would have responded to Brian in a much more level-headed, like less drama-fueled way than I felt like I had permission to express to you in that moment, Bridie. Mm. And I do remember that, like, by me dumping all my shit onto you, it was like you didn't need that. You didn't, nor did you want that. And there was a sort, like, almost a sense of like annoyance to it, and which then like I see that and I go, oh, you're fucking annoyed, are you? Like, and it's just like stacks on top of one another and it becomes this thing, right? Whereas like with our friends or even, you know, maybe certain family members, we wouldn't naturally do that. Is there something to that, Dr. Riley, or am I broken?
I don't think you're broken, but there's definitely something to that. The people that we are most vulnerable around are the ones that we also trust the most. So you trust her to be able to be completely open and honest and be yourself in that moment and share your vulnerabilities, knowing that you guys are in it for the long haul. Whereas your friends, we still worry. Are they going to judge us? Are they going to think badly of us? Are they going to think we're a pussy for not being able to handle these problems? So yeah, it makes perfect sense.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a practice? Bridie and I have, a big part of our podcast, the foundation of what the podcast was built upon is the fact that Bridie and I are polyamorous. We are in relationships with other people, while still taking care of one another and building upon our own relationship. Do you have much of a background in dealing with, for lack of a better term, like non-conventional relationship dynamics?
Interesting question. I got my doctorate in clinical psychology just about 2.5 years ago. And a part of that process is I had to do a doctoral project or a thesis, a lot of people call it. And so basically I did a 1 year long research paper. And of course we have to pick interesting topics because if you're going to read and write about something for a year, it's got to keep your interest. Sure. So I wrote about the lifestyle or the impact that a swinging lifestyle has on a committed relationship. And the reason I chose that is because first of all, it's fascinating. It's a little controversial. And secondly, I knew that was going to keep my attention for a year. I had to read and write for a year. And so, and we had seen probably a handful of people in the office that were either in the polyamorous lifestyle or the swinger lifestyle, or even in more of a fetish type lifestyle. And so I started doing research about 3 years ago on this. And now my whole private practice is kind of known as the kink friendly or the swinger friendly practice in Jacksonville, Florida.
Interesting. And what is there a pretty large,
125 I don't know, Jacksonville. A week.
Say that at the beginning, right? I guess so. I suppose there's quite a community of kink lifestyle.
Yeah, there really is. And as you guys know, a lot of people don't want to talk about it. You're not going to know. Is it your neighbor? Is it your coworker? Is it your family member? You're not necessarily going to know who's in the lifestyle. But what I did earlier this year is I took all the research from the dissertation and I changed it and kind of reformatted and repurposed it into a book that I published just a couple of months ago. It's called Ethical Cheating. And I got a lot of pushback on this book title from people in the lifestyle, right? Because they're adamant that they're not cheating. And the title confused some people and said, oh, you're saying that we're cheating. No, I'm not saying that you're cheating because you're being ethical. You're not cheating when the other person knows exactly what you're doing.
Yeah, right. I mean, we've heard that before. I've heard that before, you know, in particular, like maybe I on a first date and discussing with this person on a first date, like, yeah, I have a wife. And their response sometimes being something to the effect of like, so you guys like cheat on each other, but like, do they know? And I'm like, oh, wait, whoa. Like, there's definitely pushback there. We're like, whoa, no, there's no cheating happening. Like, let me call my wife and I'll lay in the phone.
She'd like to talk to you.
Actually. Yeah. This is really fascinating. I love that this has been such a like huge part of your work in terms of getting to the point where you are today. Is there for people who, well, let me phrase it this way first. Did you have any, before diving headfirst into the world of swinging and polyamory and ethical non-monogamy, did you have a history of relationships that fell within one of those, you know, one of those labels, or
you know, I get asked that question a lot. I actually cover that in chapter one of the book, and so people are always asking, and I tell people that who I'm having sex with is really not that interesting. Right. And to decide, you know, well, what do they want to do with their lives more so than wondering what I'm doing? I did meet someone 8-9 years ago that had been living in the lifestyle, the swinger lifestyle, for probably 15 or 20 years. And so that was another pivot into, okay, this is interesting. I want to know more about this. So I started delving in and getting other people's perspective. And then, you know, of course you have to do interviews, you have to do research. So I found people like to talk about it as long as they know they're going to be anonymous and keep their identity hidden. And so I started going, kind of running the circuit in Jacksonville to parties and clubs and places that I could meet people and get so much information. Ooh. So
why do you think it's so important for people to feel like it's anonymous?
Well, I think Florida, even though it's not really the Bible Belt, it is still kind of, at least geographically, it's in the South. And so people don't want grandma to know. They don't want their pastor at the church to know. They want to keep this separate identity outside of what they allow people to see. Like, we allow people in the outside world to see parts of us, but we don't really allow everyone to see all of us. So I think people like keeping that hidden because, of course, they're worried about stigma. They're worried about being judged. They're worrying about, is this going to affect my chances for promotion at work or any number of things?
What's your opinion on non-monogamy? With all the couples counseling and stuff that you've done and the different sort of relationship dynamics that you've experienced, do you think that non-monogamy is still like mostly going to live in like the taboo region of reality for a bit? Or do you think it's actually a really practical thing for today's couples?
I hope that it becomes more common because so many couples end up divorcing or separating because of infidelity. And if they could learn that communication style to just say, hey, here's what I want to do instead of doing it behind someone's back, I think that it would save a whole lot of relationships. I think that the most important part is communication. And of course, it doesn't matter who's coming into my office, whether it's a single female or a married man or anything in between. If you don't know how to communicate with someone, you're going to have issues in one way or another. So being able to communicate, here are my needs. I'd like to get my needs met. How can I also at the same time meet your needs and find a way for it to be mutually beneficial? That's the way all relationships work, whether we're talking about swinging or sex or the dom submissive relationship, or whether we're talking about going to the grocery store. We're always looking to get our needs met. And what I have found is if I am seeing a swinger or if I'm seeing someone in the polyamory lifestyle, chances are they are not coming in to see me because of who they're having sex with. They're coming in for any number of reasons, childhood trauma or anxiety or workplace conflict. They're not coming in because of who they're having sex with.
Turn Me On Podcast will be back after this short break.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free
or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
When you decided to dive into this research, and maybe this is too broad of a question, but I'll throw it out there anyway, just in case. But was there anything that you came to learn that really like blew your mind wide open, or was there anything that you found within your research that really like really surprised you or really shocked you in a way that you weren't anticipating?
Yeah, I did a survey for about 60 different people all over the country for the dissertation portion of my research. And I added to it as I turned the dissertation into the book. But what I found out is the biggest majority of people in the lifestyle, they are conservative when it comes to political views. They are conservative when it comes to religious or spiritual views. They are very liberal when it comes to sexual views. And typically, at least the people that I talked to as a part of this were in the higher socioeconomic status. They had bachelor's degrees, master's degrees, even doctorates, and they were mostly on their first marriage. So when we think of the stereotype, at least I did way back then, that people in this lifestyle are somehow unstable or unsteady, it's actually the opposite. They have a very good foundation for their life in general, and who they're having sex with is adding to that, not causing some amount of instability.
Ooh, that is super interesting. Then it's also something that I've never actually heard of, like a good portion of the people who are, you know, within the lifestyle are actually more so conservative leaning than liberal. That's super interesting.
When you say on their first marriage too, like, I guess these would be people who had been married for, you know, a few years, ranging to like many years, would have been included on that.
Yeah, absolutely. Most of the people that I ended up talking with or completed the survey had been married a minimum of 15 years.
Wow.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So I'm just thinking about like what the divorce rates are like for that, like people who live in that lifestyle as compared to other.
Yeah, I don't know that we'll ever really know, because when you get divorced, there's no checkbox for I was monogamous or right. I was consensually non-monogamous. We see a lot of statistics on infidelity. I think the statistic is like 90% of people expect you to be faithful in your relationship. 90% of people expect faithfulness, but yet up to 72% of all divorces are ending because of infidelity. So there's a huge disparity in that. So I don't think we'll ever know. But what I do know is that swingers or people in this lifestyle are not getting divorced because of the sex. That's usually the better part of the relationship. And I've had a lot of people say the lifestyle is what kept them together as long as they were together.
I would imagine a certain amount of that is directly attributed to the communication skills and having
communication
and having
huge
conversations that might be really scary to have. 'Cause, you know, like for a lot of people, non-monogamy or monogamy is just the way. You just like, you know, say get married and then you have one partner presumably for the rest of your life, but no, neither party in the marriage has been like, what's in this rule book? Like, what are your expectations versus my expectations? It's just expected that you will be monogamous and then have sex with one person for the rest of your life. And if that's not, that that doesn't happen, then, no, I forget where I was going with this. Totally lost on a rant.
Yeah, okay.
Sometimes people get distracted when they start talking about sex. I see
that. Yeah, I bet.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like this is a good opportunity for me to kind of like steer the wheel in a bit of a different direction. This is something that came up in on the podcast. I think, Brady, I think you and I had talked about this recently, but or maybe we were just talking about it in private, but I had, and also I want to say this before I go into this, Dr. Riley, I am not expecting you to shrink me right now. However, I'm not going to say no if you want to, you know, whatever, just show us your skills.
I am always therapizing, always therapizing.
So I had this, I attribute, for the longest time, I've attributed my ability to have sex with other people or me having sex with other people has played a pretty large role in having an effect on how I see myself, how I view myself, you know? So like my self-confidence, is pretty heavily tied to the sex that I'm having. And this is something that I've known but haven't really like looked at or addressed or have like chosen to think about very much throughout my life. And I think I've had it like I've had it brought up to me from past partners that like that this is clearly something that you go through. And then I was thinking about the first time I experienced my sexual debut, my first sexual experience, which was a which was a threesome. And that experience in high school with two very attractive girls that I was like crushing on. When I went through that experience, an interesting thing happened the following couple of days, which was there was a ton of really intense social feedback based on the fact that the knowledge of me having a threesome with these two girls got around the school. And I experienced what was like, like an immense amount of congratulations and affirmation and high fives. And, you know, it was like, I became like, I had like 15 minutes of fame for having my threesome in high school, right?
Yeah. And you know what? That you actually said a lot of things that I want to touch on. But for men do get high-fived for having multiple sexual partners and even multiple sexual partners at the same time. Whereas women, our sexuality is often frowned upon. We have sex to procreate. Mm-hmm. And really, if we say, hey, we like to have sex, then we're looked down upon. Mm-hmm. Even religions do this. And so you're right. The man gets a high five. It's a status symbol for a man to get another notch on his belt. And it's not for women. So it's a double standard.
Go ahead.
And a lot of men do base their identity on their ability to have sex. It's not right or wrong. It just is. And so that tiny, not literally tiny, but in comparison to the rest of the body, that tiny organ, it becomes the identity of who they are.
Yeah. And that note about the you know, like the slut shaming when it comes to women, that was something so this all stemmed from a conversation that I was having with my girlfriend. And that was one of the first things that she said when I brought up this past experience that I had. It was like, you know, her response was, that's so funny, because if that had been me in high school, I would have been slut shamed.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And so it got me thinking about how it got me thinking about the double standard there. It got me thinking about how much of an impact that that has had on my life as a sexual being. It got me thinking about how other people's first sexual experiences have likely had a pretty big impact on their lives as future sexual beings. And I guess, like, you know, since we're talking to you and with your credentials, what can you speak to how the sex that we're having, who we're having sex with, how that plays a role into our own like mental health, you know, like our day-to-day mental health. And again, this is stemming from like this notion of me knowing that, oh, if I go, like, you know, during the lockdown, the COVID lockdown, like I didn't have sex for probably the longest amount of time that I didn't have sex for, which was since I started having sex, which was like, whatever, I don't know, 3-4 months. And that was driving me fucking bananas. Like it was really taking a toll on me mentally. And so, yeah, I guess I'm curious to know, like, what are your thoughts on how mental health and is affected by our sex lives or not so much affected by our sex lives?
Yeah, well, it's definitely affected. If you look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs, we have different levels of needs. And one of those basic levels is biology. And we are biologically created to have sex. And of course, as we know, oftentimes men have a higher sex drive and they're allowed to have a higher sex drive. So you could say, yeah, I went 3 or 4 months without having sex and drove me crazy. You're very rarely ever going to hear a woman say that because, again, we're not allowed to have a sex drive, to talk about that sex drive. So we, as women, were taught from a very early age to put everybody else's needs ahead of our own. And so if we're wanting to have sex, well, there must be something wrong with us because that sounds incredibly selfish to want to get my own needs met. And so our mental health is definitely affected by who we're doing or what we're doing or who we're not doing, for that matter.
Are you like, you know, in 2020, are you seeing a shift, you know, over the last, like, whatever, 10 years? Like, are we headed in the direction where we aren't going to be in this, or we'll be further away from this place that we currently find ourselves in, which is, again, like, coming back to this double standard where, you know, typically women have a harder time expressing themselves sexually without the fear of being labeled as something that is, you know, derogatory.
I hope we're evolving in that way. We're evolving in so many other ways in the world right now. So I hope that we're evolving. I can tell you that what the people that I see are probably just a tiny fraction of what's really going on. So based on what I'm seeing in my office with 125 people a week, we are definitely evolving. Women are becoming more assertive. They're being able to say, hey, here's what I want, here's what I don't want. And they're being able to express themselves and be unapologetic for it, because that's the most important piece. If a woman expresses herself and she gets shamed or criticized or judged for it, she's going to be less likely in the future to say what her needs are. But we do a lot of women empowerment in my office because I teach people that they have to go out and then teach others how to treat them. So we all teach people how to treat us. And if you teach someone that it's okay to walk all over me, it's okay to not listen to me, it's okay to not take into consideration my needs, then people are going to say, okay, well, this is what she's taught me, so this is obviously the way that I can do it. But when we teach people, you can't talk over me, you can't ignore my needs, you can't do those things, then a lot of wonderful things happen. I mean, there for a while, and I don't advocate for divorce, but sometimes it's just inevitable. So earlier this year, I had probably about 16 or 20 people that were all going through divorce at the same time. And I was like, what the fuck? Have I started a divorce club right here in my own practice? Because I was teaching these women to, hey, stand up for yourself. That's not okay. And if you express that, and your partner is adamant that he or she is not going to meet your needs, then you need to make a decision on whether or not you want to be in this relationship. Of course, I don't tell people they should get divorced. I don't tell people they should stay married, but I help them walk through what's going to be best for them to meet those needs.
I wonder if, I don't know if this is kind of not something we usually do, but we've had a couple of, questions come in recently from listeners that, that I've kind of been sitting on. We call them brain boners. Sometimes Jeremy and I offer our non-professional advice to people, but sometimes I look at them and I go, I wonder if this is a better question for a professional, and maybe we'll just wait until one comes on the show. So I do have a question. If I'm just looking through my email here to see if I can find it.
Also, whoever wrote these questions, we'll be sure to email them back and tell them to email Money Transfer You, Dr. Riley. I believe in U.S. dollar currency.
U.S. dollars accepted.
So, we'll be sure to Venmo that to you or something.
Okay. Okay, so here's a question. I've been with my boyfriend for 2 years now, known him for 3, and we've been living together for over a year. I was using his laptop and came upon chats he was using with random women, sharing smut back and forth. I immediately confronted him with what I had found, and he was honest with me and said he has been doing this since he was a kid. Never anyone he knows, just people he finds on chat rooms. He said that it makes him feel terrible, and he has been harboring a lot of guilt. He said that it is a compulsive thing that he can't control, and that the person writing those things isn't really him. He said that he feels as though something is wrong with him and that he wants to stop and get better. So he has reached out to multiple therapists, and I have also signed up for counseling and ordered myself a copy of The State of Affairs, per your recommendation, Bridie. I truly love him and know he's a good person, and I could see the pain on his face when being honest with me. So I am choosing to stand by him and help him. My question to you is that, do you think this is a form of sex addiction? And do you have any advice in ways I can further support my partner through this? And if you have any experience yourself with these chat rooms, thanks so much. I would love your point of view.
Okay.
I haven't been in a chat room since junior high school.
So there's a lot going on here, and my answer may be a little complicated, but if you think about a smoker knows that smoking is bad for them. I mean, the messages are everywhere that smoking is bad. It causes premature death. It hardens your arteries. It collapses your lungs. So that rationally, logically, the smoker knows, don't smoke, it's not good for you. But there is something from the subconscious part of the mind that says, hey, keep smoking, that's good for you. The subconscious mind is always going to override the conscious mind. So it's the same thing when you see someone that washes their hands 20, 30 times a day. Logically, they know they don't have to, but subconsciously, there is something in there going, hey, you have to protect yourself by washing your hands this many times. So what's happening in this situation is rationally, logically, the guy knows, hey, I probably shouldn't be doing this. And I don't like that word. We can come back to that. He knows I shouldn't be doing this, but then subconsciously, there's something saying, hey, you're getting a benefit for this. You have to keep doing it. So that subconscious mind is overriding the conscious part of the mind, which is going, don't do this. So yes, I do believe that he probably feels a lot of shame and guilt. He doesn't have to, he doesn't need to. We can definitely fix that right up. But a lot of times that's the conflict in our brains comes from the subconscious mind and the conscious mind when they're in conflict with one another.
Sorry, go ahead, Brad.
Yeah, I, this question is so, there's a lot of layers in there. And I guess one of the things that stands out to me for this person is that it sounds like they're going to start going to therapy.
Which may or may not be helpful, because chances are if they don't get the right therapist, the therapist is going to try to do behavior modification or some type of cognitive behavioral therapy, where they're going to give that hidden, subtle message that this is wrong, don't do this. The subconscious mind is saying, hey, this meets a need that you have. You may not even know what the need is, but this is meeting a need that you have. So keep doing it. And so I would address it by saying, do it as much as you want. Go ahead. Message these people. Do it until you don't want to do it anymore. Because sometimes when you give permission to people to do things, the taboo-ness of it goes away, or the appeal goes away, because, oh, well, now I have permission to do it. I don't want to do it anymore, because we're all rebels like that. You tell us we can do something, we don't want to do it.
Mm. What would you say to the partner of someone who, like, you know, to the listener who wrote in, who's struggling with the fact that this is happening or had been happening behind their back? What would you say to them what would you say to them?
I would definitely explain to them the way the subconscious mind works versus the conscious mind, so that they understand this is not a personal affront to the partner. This is most likely not something he is doing to punish her or get back at her or to hurt her in any way. Most likely has absolutely nothing to do with her. So yeah. I'd make sure that she understands that. I deal with a lot of hypnosis work, and that's always kind of my go-to. If you want to change the underlying message of the subconscious, just do hypnosis, because we can talk about it until the cows come home. It's not going to change anything. But if you can get in there straight to the subconscious mind, that's where you're going to change things. But again, biology says that we are sexual beings. However we were created, whoever created us, we like to have sex. We're allowed, well, men are allowed to say it, but women like to have sex too. That's how all the men are getting to have sex, is because the women are willing participants. So to shame someone for this natural biology and say, oh no, you can't do that. And religions, as we know, do that a whole lot. So that's a whole nother topic. But to shame someone and say you shouldn't do that just creates more guilt and judgment and feelings of despair that cause a downward decline in mental health.
You, in the original, in originally answering that question that Brady wrote, I think you had said you wanted to come back to how you don't like the word. And I'm assuming that I think the word was shouldn't.
Should.
Or
yeah.
The word should. Yeah, the should. So don't should people. Brady, I know this is going to resonate with you because you've taught me this.
Yeah. So if you hear the word should, we automatically think guilt. We automatically think shame. We think there is this burden that we have to. So I should go to the gym. I should wash the dishes. Oh, damn, I should get up and do some laundry. None of that sounds very pleasant. That sounds like just kind of a burden. But if we change that word to could, it presents more as an opportunity. I could go to the gym. I could do the dishes. I could get up and start some laundry. The word could is an opportunity that we can choose whether or not to take it. And when we choose to take it, we may feel good about ourselves, or we can choose not to. And we don't have that shame that should brings us. I teach women all the time, get rid of the word should. Just get rid of it. Mm. Replace it with could, because I haven't found a whole lot of instances where you can't use could instead of should.
Mm. That's one thing that, Bridie, I am so thankful for in our relationship, is that's one of the things that you've taught me, is the amount of times you've told me, don't should me. You've said it enough now that anytime the word should is about to come out when I'm talking to someone, I immediately stop myself and I try to reroute how I'm communicating the thing that I'm communicating.
Yeah, that's a perfect example of someone teaching you how to treat them.
Yeah, so, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, she taught you that word's not okay in our relationship or our dynamic. Get rid of that word. And you've learned that. So now you're even applying that to other people who haven't even given you that message, but you're taking it so loud and clear that it's huge. Nobody likes the word should.
No. Yeah. You've trained me well, Bridie. You've trained me up very well.
Well, that's good to hear. It's
still a work in progress because you're a man.
Yes, that's right.
Well, it's so funny, the process of, you know, talking about the subconscious and the conscious, like, first of all, even recognizing that you have this pattern, or that you get some benefit from repeating this thing is the, like, you know, at least with meditation, you know, it's the first step in being able to shift anything in your brain is noticing it.
Absolutely. So you have to be aware of whatever it is before you can change it. That's the first step. I think that even is, like, mentioned in AA, you have to be aware of the problem or admit that there's a problem before you can address it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Someone was just writing to me about that as well. Like that their partner was really, what's the word, standoffish about the idea of opening up to polyamory. And she was like, but it'll absolutely like transform our relationship. And I was thinking about it and wondering what to tell her and just kind of coming to the conclusion that, like, you know, is your partner even open to this idea being a possibility without any pressure from you? Is it a burden or is he curious about it? Because if they're just like, no thanks, and you're like, but please, like, talk to these people. They're in a polyamorous relationship. Or, like, read this book and it'll change your mind. Like, if there's no natural inclination to want to create change in your own mind and your relationship to something, the suggestion of polyamory, perhaps, you have to kind of be receptive. You have to prime your mind with being at least receptive to having your mind changed.
Yeah, a lot of there is a big myth and misconception when it comes to the swinger lifestyle or the polyamory lifestyle, and that is that men force the women into it and that the women don't have free will and they don't get to make their own decisions. And I have talked to a lot of women who said that they were introduced to it by their significant other or their spouse, and that it may not have been their idea, but once they got in and they said, hey, you know what, I started having some good experiences, once they got brought into it, built up their confidence a bit, then the women were very likely to stay in it and enjoy it. But a lot of women do feel like they would have never done it had their husbands or significant others not encouraged them along the way. And then on the flip side of that, a lot of women are the ones that said, hey, this was my idea. I brought my wife into it because I wanted to do this and get my needs met. But it is all about being receptive and hearing your partner's needs and being willing on some level to meet them.
Mm. Yeah. Communicate again, like time and time and time again, communication is key. Like that is the amount of times that has come up on the podcast is.
Oh yeah. Everybody that walks into my office says, I can't communicate with my significant other. We can't communicate. And so what I actually tell them is you are communicating. You're just not doing it effectively. So to start them on building them up on a strength-based perspective, yes, you are communicating something. It may be nonverbal. It may be by what you're not saying. You're definitely communicating something. It's now let's take that skill and make it a better one so that your partner is really hearing what you have to say.
Do you have any, before we wrap up, do you have any resources that you feel would be valuable to some of the folks at home listening to this, specifically surrounding the topic of like effective communication? Also, I mean, definitely again, plug your book here. That would be a great opportunity to do that as well.
I think that communication is key, and you first have to know, how do I communicate? How does my partner communicate? How can we build on this? So definitely be able to seek professional help if you need it. We're licensed in Florida. I'm also licensed in New York, but we see people right now because of COVID, we see them all over the country, and we can do telehealth and we can teach these communication patterns. I've got some really easy things I do with adults, with crayons and a blank piece of paper. I can teach them more communication styles with a crayon and blank coloring paper than I can with, you know, my fancy books and models and theories and all of that. There is definitely a chapter in my book, Ethical Cheating, on if you want to talk to your partner about potentially exploring this lifestyle, here's how to do it, here's what not to do. And I think a lot of men read that chapter because, let's face it, a lot of times men screw up. You guys are born with this birth defect. It's called testosterone. We all know it. We love you anyway. So there's definitely ways to go about letting someone know what you want, what you need, and at the same time, not coming across as selfish and demanding, but being able to say, I want to meet my needs. I want to meet your needs. How can we do that in a mutually beneficial manner?
Well, Dr. Riley, this has been a real treat to be able to sit down and chat with you about the work that you've done. I want to say on behalf of all of our listeners, thank you so much for taking the time.
Yeah, thanks for having me. We'll do it again soon.
Okay, absolutely. Thank you. Thank you so much. Well, there we have it. That was our conversation. Babe. Yo, what's up?
Is the ending also being recorded for our patrons?
No.
Oh.
So now we're back. Now we're back after the... I'm keeping this in. I'm keeping all this in. This is hilarious.
Well, I just wanted to find out because you put the...
Our
banner up?
Yeah. Our patrons get just the foreplay. And then this little segment that we're in right now, everyone's listening to this right now.
But nobody's seeing it.
No one's seeing this.
It's too bad because I like to dance when our theme music is on, and it means that our patrons, because you put that banner up.
Yeah, but you know what? Our theme music wasn't playing there to everyone who's listening on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
So I was just dancing. I was just silent discoing.
You were just silent discoing, and yeah, but you know what? It doesn't matter because no one can see you. So, hey guys, that was our conversation with Dr. Cindy. Dr. Riley. Sorry, I spoke to a Dr. Cindy yesterday on Sick Boy.
That's funny because I know a Cindy Riley. So I was like, oh, you know Cindy Riley too?
Funny. How about that?
So listeners, let us know what you think about that that brain boner feedback. Yeah. I mean, you know what?
I liked it.
I like that she said it's not about you. Because I think we all need to hear that more often.
All of us do, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it's not going to feel good for the person who wrote in, but hey, you know, truth hurts sometimes.
Be told.
Anyway, that was this week's episode. We love you all so much, especially our patrons. And if you, again, want to watch us during our foreplays, go to patreon.com/turnmeon. There's a bunch of other fun, good goodies over there as well. You can get some merch.
Stickers, mugs, and t-shirts.
I think a t-shirt like with kind of your tits on it. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Speaking of breasts.
Yeah.
And if you want to reach out to us, you can always do that. turnmeonpodcast@gmail.com or follow us on Instagram, which probably won't be available much longer. We're going to get zucked any moment now. I'm having photos deleted left, right, and center from our Turn Me On Podcast Instagram at Turn Me On.
Catch it while you can.
All right, that's it for this week.
Until next week,
go fuck yourself.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.